my cheek grow hot. How could I have been so cavalier? Gasha, please, Susanna said. You really want to help, Miss Faraday? Help my sister. Kasha walked to Dr. Hitzig. I will pay you anything to put her on that list.
We will know more after the test, Dr. Hitzig began.
My sister is a woman who can save lives. She has done nothing but help others. You treat her, and you treat thousands.
I wish it were otherwise, but the doctors here agree, Dr. Hitzig said.
We cannot overrule the Zubovid, I said. I'm leaving, Kasha said. This is ridiculous. She rushed out. I'm so sorry, I said to Susanna.
Susanna laid one hand on my sleeve.
I understand, Miss Faraday. Caroline, dear, the important thing is the rest of the girls get to America. I gathered Susanna in my arms and held her close. Such a lovely woman, but so thin. How tragic she was so ill. If only we could get some of the Woolsey remedies into her. When we finally separated, Susanna took my hand. Don't mind my sister, Caroline. Kasha is just a little tense sometimes. We've been through a lot together. But your gifts are very much appreciated. She smiled. And if you want to leave your gifts at the head check, I'll make sure the girls get them once no one is looking.
Chapter 40. Kasha. 1958. The day before I was scheduled to leave for America, our tiny bedroom was scattered with clothes, some mine, most borrowed. Pietrik rubbed his back, sore from taking my suitcase down from the closet shelf and putting it back up, since I'd packed and unpacked 6 times. Pietrik had won a radio at the factory, a prize for the most productive worker, and we turned it up, for good-looking Eddie Fisher, my favorite singer, was on. Dungaree doll, paint your initials on my jeans. Pietrik held me and we swayed to the music. It would be nice to be able to dance again. But how could I go to America and have the operation without Susanna? I released Pietrik and continued to unpack. How can you be so foolish, he said. I'm not going without Susanna. Pietrik sat on the bed next to my open suitcase, Matka's old green one. Susanna told you to go. How can you pass this up? I wanted to get on that plane, more than I'd wanted anything in a long time. I would have the chance to have my leg put back to normal, or close to it. Just the idea that I might be relieved of the pain made me giddy, and all the girls were scheduled for dental work. Could the dentists there fix my tooth? It had gotten so bad, I hardly smiled. Plus, what would it be like to fly in a jet to New York and see the sights? California, too. The Lublin papers had already made us celebrities. I pulled my good dress from the suitcase and hung it back in the closet. How can I leave Susanna here? We'd miss you if you went, he said. But think of all you miss out on, Kasha. Susanna's the one who most wants you to go. What about Halina? How does this look? Her mother afraid. The thought of flying on a plane for the first time made my stomach hurt. Never mind the prospect of having to use my terrible English in America and of another operation. I'd be gone for months. Who's to say Susanna would be alive when I returned? Pietrik took my hand. We'll take good care of her. His hand felt good around mine. I pulled away and closed the locks of my empty suitcase. There's no changing my mind, I said. Pietrik heaved my suitcase up returning it to the top shelf of the closet. You have to learn there are some things you can't change. So it would be better to leave my sister here to die? I'm not... I turned to see Susanna there in our bedroom doorway. Oh, I was... Had she heard? Susanna stepped into the room, hands behind her back. Don't worry about it, Kasia. I braced myself, arms folded across my chest. I won't go without you. I'm glad, she said. So you're not upset with me? She smiled. Not at all. I wrapped my arms around her and felt her hard ribs through the back of her dress. Good, because I would never leave you. Well, that makes me happy, Susanna said, because if I'm going to die, I'll want you near me. She pulled from her pocket a telegram envelope. Especially since we'll be in New York together. She pulled a sheet from the envelope, cleared her throat, and read. Miss Susanna Kuzmeritsk, cleared for travel to U.S. Stop. Travel documents to follow. Stop. Report to Warsaw Airport with New York-bound group. Stop. Bon voyage. Stop. Caroline Faraday. Stop. Pietrik walked to the closet and pulled the suitcase down from the shelf as Susanna and I swayed in each other's arms to Eddie Fisher's smooth voice. Together. 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 Chapter 41. Kasia. December 1958. We landed at Idlewild Airport in New York at 8:30 a.m. 35 very excited Polish women. The din of Polish on that plane was so loud, but the other passengers were kind and seemed to enjoy watching it all. Caroline met us as we came down the steps from the plane, some of us very slowly, and directed a parade of wheelchairs. The name Caroline means joy, so it's no wonder we were all so happy to see her. She looked beautiful in a navy suit, French scarf, and a charming little felt hat with a feather on top. Why isn't she married? All the Polish ladies asked. Tall, slim, and delicately pretty, with the regal bearing of a queen. In Poland, Caroline would have had many marriage proposals each day. Once we made it through customs, a crush of reporters and Red Cross people and friends of Caroline surrounded us. So many camera bulbs flashing.
How do you like it in America so far? Said one reporter, pointing a microphone at my face.
If the food on the plane is any sign, it will be a good trip, I said. They all laughed. Welcome to the Polish ladies, said Caroline, her arm around Susanna's waist. An olive branch across the miles. You've never in your life seen so many smiling faces in one place. That week, we all split up and went to different cities. Susanna and I stayed in New York with Caroline for treatment at Mount Sinai Hospital. Others went to Boston for reconstructive surgery, to Detroit, Baltimore, and Cleveland for heart operations. Two went to the National Jewish Hospital in Denver for the best tuberculosis treatment in the world, for their lungs were still bad. My sister and I were lucky to stay in New York, since there was so much to see. Caroline drove us all over. Susanna in the front seat, of course. Caroline couldn't get enough of Susanna, it seemed, as if they were best friends all of a sudden. Here is Central Park, ladies, one of the most beautiful parks in the world. We have beautiful parks in Poland, I said. She talked about her city as if it were the only one in the world. We drove down Fifth Avenue. Hundreds of cars choked the streets, many with only one person inside. Such wastefulness. How was it allowed? Our first day at Mount Sinai Hospital was a busy one, packed with blood tests and every other test you can imagine. Mount Sinai was a massive complex, 10 times the size of any Polish hospital. It took a long time to get anywhere, since the pain in my leg forced me to rest often, and since Caroline stopped everyone she saw and introduced us. "These ladies are here for medical treatment, all the way from Poland," she would say. People were polite but looked at us with pity. It was kind of Caroline to introduce us, but it made it impossible to blend in. The glass front doors of the hospital parted as if by magic, and Caroline forged ahead with Susanna as we hurried to meet the doctor. Susanna looked about her, remarking upon every little thing. "Can you believe this place? So huge." Caroline turned as she walked. 6 floors? All state-of-the-art." "How do they get to know the patients in such a big place?" I asked. Susanna dropped back to walk with me. "This is the future of medicine. Can't wait to see the rehabilitation ward." "We have that at home," I said. "What? A jump rope and 2 dumbbells? They have a whole hydrotherapy unit here. Some people would be grateful to receive such care." We changed into hospital gowns, and the nurse affixed a paper bracelet to my wrist. As we went to be x-rayed, I kept my purse and clothes with me, though a locker was offered. "Can you believe this equipment?" Susanna asked. I slipped a soft robe over my gown. "Ours does the same thing, just not as new." We walked to the doctor's office in slippers we were allowed to keep. "Please, let me take your things," said the doctor's nurse, a tall woman wearing a ruffled nurse's cap. She tried to take my clothes and purse from my arms, but I held on tight. "I'll keep them, thank you." The nurse helped me up a little step stool to sit on the examining table. The paper crinkled under me as I sat. Dr. Howard Rusk was a good-looking man with a shock of white hair and a kind face. He held up a small metal box that fit in his palm.
"Do I have your permission to record my notes with this device? It saves me time."
A doctor asking a patient for permission? That was different. I nodded, and Dr. Rusk spoke into the box.
"The operations at Ravensbrück concentration camp in Fürstenberg, Germany, throughout 1942, left Mrs. Bukowski, a 35-year-old Caucasian woman of Polish-German descent, with reduced muscle function in her left calf, complicated by the introduction of foreign elements."
He slid my x-ray under the metal rim of the light box and flicked on the light. Susanna turned to me, her mouth open. There was a light box in every exam room. We had only one at the hospital back home. My x-ray showed a scattering of objects in my calf. How strange to see it in such detail. I'd had plenty of x-rays, but had never seen such clarity. It brought the operating room at Ravensbrück back in full color. Dr. Gebhardt. Dr. Oberhäuser. I started to sweat as the doctor slid another x-ray onto the light box.
"Tibia has been reduced by 6 centimeters, resulting in antalgic gait. Network of neuromas developed around site. Partial source of localized nerve pain Mrs. Bukowski suffers from. Treatment scheduled as follows. Procedure to remove foreign elements and neuromas to increase blood flow and reduce pain, and reconstructive plastic surgery. Recommend orthopedic prosthesis, pain medication as needed, and routine post-op psychiatric eval."
By the time Dr. Rusk clicked off his recording machine, I was short of breath. Could he tell?
"Any questions, Mrs. Bukowski?"
"After the operation, will I still have pain?"
"Hard to say 100%. Chances are there will still be some pain, yes, but substantially reduced. Your gait will improve significantly."
"No more questions, doctor. Thank you." I stepped down from the examining table, eager to escape that room and the x-rays hanging there.
"We'll also schedule the post-op psychiatric evaluation later."
"I'm not crazy, doctor."
"It's standard. The Hiroshima maidens found it helpful."
The doctor helped Susanna up to the table.
Good then. You'll spend the night here and we'll get started in the morning. You can wait here or in the reception area to check in.
The operation will happen tomorrow? I asked.
The sooner we proceed, the sooner you recover.
Recover? My mind flashed to the Revere recovery room. How could I do that again? Dr. Rusk moved on to Susanna, and I left the room, panic dragging through me. Would the surgery be painful? Would I lie in a cast for days? I changed back into my clothes and made my way down the maze of corridors and out the magic doors. There would be no operation. I was happy to keep my antalgic gait. Thank you.
Chapter 42. Kasha. 1958.
Once out on the street, I pulled off my hospital band and tossed it in a trash can. It was good to be anonymous walking the crowded streets of New York. The crossing sign lit up, "Don't walk." I stopped there on the sidewalk, but the rest of the crowd continued across the street. I walked until my leg ached, looking at hats and shop windows, then made it back to the waiting room at Mount Sinai. I sat and paged through magazines, my favorite part of a doctor's visit, especially looking at American magazines. I flipped through the Saturday Review. I stopped at an advertisement for The Diary of Anne Frank, a new picture at the cinema. A pretty actress sat cross-legged, dressed in a peasant skirt, and smiled from the page. America's idea of what the real Anne Frank was like. Then I stopped short at an article. The Lapins Are Coming was the title, and it was written by Norman Cousins. Lapin. How much prettier the word rabbit is in French. The way he told the story, it sounded beautiful. So far, nearly 300 Saturday Review readers have contributed almost $6,000 to the General Lapin's fund. The biggest costs are yet to come, of course. How generous people in America were to us. Suddenly, Caroline and Susanna were upon me.
"Kasha, where have you been?" Caroline asked.
"We paged you. I needed some air. Can we go now?"
"Go?"
Caroline looked about to fall over.
"They're waiting for you at check-in. Where's your ID band?"
"I'd rather not."
"Do you know what has gone into all this for you? Dr. Rusk is one of the best surgeons in America."
The little feather on her hat shook as she spoke.
"No one asked if I wanted this," I said.
Caroline's cheeks flushed pink.
"You're risking everything we've worked for. Now Susanna is late, too."
Susanna took me by the arm and none too gently. "May I speak with Kasha in private?" She steered me around the corner.
"Are you out of your mind?"
"I can't do this again," I said. "I know this is hard for you, but you won't have this chance. Let me think about it."
"No, Kasha. It's now or never."
"The thought of another plaster, and how do I know I can trust them once I'm asleep?"
"There'll be no plaster."
"I asked, and I'll walk you there. Keep an eye on things."
"Stay with me?"
"I'll scrub in if they let me. Watch the whole thing.
No one will hurt you, except me, if you don't get back in there."
When I woke after the surgery, I thought I was back in the Revere at Ravensbrück. My pulse raced, but once I felt my leg wrapped in a clean bandage and remembered where I was, relief flooded through me to the tips of my fingers. The best part was, I barely felt any pain. The morphine was administered intravenously. There wouldn't be any sticking with a needle. Before long, I ate soft foods, even drank coffee. My bed had 6 buttons to adjust its position, and I had my own nurse, Dot, from a Long Island, close to Manhattan. She wore a white cap with black stripes along the top, meaning she had trained at Mount Sinai. Not that different from my cap I wore at home. The next afternoon, I walked for the first time, leaning heavily on two nurses, but it was the best feeling in the world to take steps without the usual steps to my calf. Once Dot brought my lunch, I could not stop babbling. "I'll walk everywhere from now on, dance with my husband again." Dot cleared my lunch tray, something a nurse's assistant would have done back in Lublin.
"Looks like you're in the clean plate club."
Of course, I ate everything.
"Today you see Dr. Krasny. She's good to talk to."
I tucked the paper salt packets from my tray in my pocket. "A psychiatrist?
No, thank you."
Just what I needed. A report sent back to Lublin that said I was crazy. People had disappeared for less.
"You won't have to walk. I'll get a wheelchair."
Was Dot chewing gum? This was allowed?
"Dr. Krasny's a doll. Wish I could sit for an hour and talk about my problems."
The floor supervisor came to the door.
"Dot, your chair's here. Better get it before someone else does." "Hold on just a minute," she said.
Talking back to a supervisor? Dot wouldn't last long on the trauma floor back home.
"So are you going to refuse treatment? Keep it bottled up, and it'll just come out some other way."
"Thank you for your concern," I said. It took getting used to. Americans giving out advice without being asked. Once Dot told me that all records were confidential and would not be sent back to Poland, I agreed to see Dr. Krasny. I doubted the confidential part, but thought it worse to refuse. The doctor's office was tidy but cramped, which did nothing to ease my nerves. Through the one small window, I saw snowflakes dance in the wind. I was surprised to find that the doctor was a young woman. She wore pretty black glasses that curved up on the ends. Her diploma on the wall looked new, probably just out of school. Inexperienced enough to write me up as mentally ill when that was not the case at all, I would have to stay composed. She barely glanced at me when the orderly wheeled me in.
"You're late. Half your time is up."
"Maybe it was a mistake to come," I said.
"Feel free to leave."
Could they not find a nicer doctor at Mount Sinai? "You're so young." The doctor capped her pen and tossed it onto the desk.
"We're not here to talk about me."
I pulled on the rubber tires of the chair, but the orderly had braked it.
"I can't stay," I said.
The doctor settled back in her chair.
"In this country, you have a choice."
I pressed one index finger with the other. "First of all, I'm not mentally unstable."
"I'm a psychiatrist, just here to talk."
Could I tell her about the cheese sandwich? "We have psychiatrists in Poland," I said.
"One for every 5,000 Polish people is what I hear. Can't be easy getting an appointment."
"Would have been easier if the Germans hadn't killed them all." The doctor reached for my chart.
"Says here you have trouble sleeping."
"My sister is a doctor." She told them that.
"And trouble breathing in small spaces. That is known as a claustrophobic adult-onset panic episode."
"I'm a nurse. I know what it's called."
"Then you know how to stop the attacks? How's that working?"
She stared at me.
"You were in a camp."
"It's on my chart."
"Ravensbrück. Only women?"
"Yes."
"Tortured?"
"Every day was torture." That got the crack of a smile from Dr. Krasny. "I don't need sympathy." Dr. Krasny sat up straighter in her chair.
"I see."
She eyed the chart.
"Your mother," she said.
I took a deep breath. "She brought me a cheese sandwich and was arrested along with me."
"I hope you don't think it was your fault."
I examined my fingernails. Of course it was my fault.
"She didn't return with you from the camp?"
"She disappeared. I don't know what happened."
"Any ideas?"
"I don't think of it."
"Not an inkling?"
I watched a little tornado of snow swirl around the window ledge.
Things happened there, I said. Care to elaborate? That's how this works.
I brushed the hair back from my forehead. She just disappeared. She was helping a doctor.
Did the doctor do it?
I don't know.
Not an inkling?
It's not that easy. You don't understand. Snow clung to the window panes, closing us in. I breathed hard. Not now. It was no time for an episode.
Many of the doctor's colleagues were executed. But she's in prison. How do you feel about that?
Good. As long as she stays there.
And when she's done her time?
Not until 1967. I'll deal with it then.
Do you wish she'd been executed too?
No. Dr. Krasny looked at me, eyebrows up.
Why?
She knows what happened to my mother.
What was your relationship like with your mother? Did you love her?
Of course. I was her favorite. What does this have to do with anything? I pinched my hand to prevent the tears from falling. The doctor shook her head.
Not sure.
Not an inkling, doctor? Dr. Krasny pulled off her glasses and wiped the lenses.
I do know unresolved questions can play havoc with the psyche, produce hostility, ruin relationships.
She replaced her glasses and looked at me for a long second.
I don't often offer advice to my patients, Mrs. Bukowski.
No need to start.
But you're lucky you're alive.
Lucky? My palms were wet with sweat. Please.
You suffered, but you're here.
Sometimes I wish I wasn't. You don't know what it was like.
I do know you're holding on to the pain of losing your mother. After all, that's all you have left of her, isn't it? Give that up, and you give up the last thing you have of her.
I turned my face to the window.
I also know you have considerable work to do, and you need to put your shoulder to it. That's the secret to getting better.
The doctor gathered her papers and tapped them on her desk.
Orderly, she called. Mrs. Bukowski needs an escort to her room.
I can make it on my own, I said. The doctor leaned closer to me.
Look, Mrs. Bukowski, you'll make no progress until you get to the bottom of that anger, and I would embrace the sympathy people give you. You need all the help you can get.
Caroline brought us up to her country home she called The Hay, north of New York City in Bethlehem, Connecticut, for Christmas. Tears welled in her eyes when she told us her late father had named it The Hay after an estate his family once owned in England. She said the air was cleaner up north, good for recuperation, and maybe that was true, for I was taking short walks before long. Susanna and I both felt so much better being up there at Caroline's home. Perhaps it had something to do with Caroline's mother, Mrs. Faraday, treating Susanna and me like queens. From the time she met us at the door, dressed in Polish folk costume, to the minute we left for California, she fussed over us as if we were her own. She'd learned many Polish phrases to make us feel at home. How wonderful it was to be able to take steps like a normal person again. Mrs. Faraday lent me her fur coat, and we walked arm in arm about their property. To a warm barn that smelled of sweet hay and horses, sun slanting in through the high windows. Out to the playhouse Caroline had used as a youngster, a child-sized version of the main house, complete with a working stove. But even with a special treatment, I couldn't shake the homesickness for Poland and for Pietrik and Halina. It didn't help that Caroline favored Susanna and rose early each morning to take tea with her, the two of them sitting at the kitchen table, heads together to share a little story, laugh at the private joke. It was understandable, for everyone loved Susanna. Thankful as I was to the Faradays, I wanted my sister back. I tried to count my blessings. Bethlehem was a very nice place to spend Christmas. Caroline took us everywhere, to the small store across from the town green, Merrill Brothers, that sold everything one could want, even melons and green beans in the winter, to Mass at the Abbey of Regina Laudis, home to cloistered nuns who sang haunting, beautiful chants. One Sunday, her chauffeur's day off, Caroline drove us to Mass in her long green car, so big it fit all of us, including the Russian cook Sergei, with room to spare. Caroline stared straight ahead and gripped the steering wheel so tightly, I thought she'd break it. Mrs. Faraday told me later that people in town got word out to stay off the roads whenever Caroline took to that car. But I was happiest just being at the house, for the hay was the most beautiful one I'd ever seen. Tall and white, with black shutters, and enough room for a family of 10. The furnishings were all quite old, but very nice, including parlor curtains Mrs. Faraday had sewn herself, with the most intricate crewel work. The barns out back were home to 3 horses, a handsome German shepherd named Lucky, whom Susanna and I were terrified of at first, until he proved to be a most gentle, loyal companion, many sheep and chickens, and the pig that followed Caroline everywhere. She spoke French to it. "Come, chérie," she said as it waddled after her, "dépêchez-vous. Vous pouvez être beau, mais cela ne signifie pas que je vais attendre." You may be beautiful, but that doesn't mean I'll wait. That pig even followed Caroline into the house on occasion, climbing up the front stairs with great effort and to her bedroom. Caroline was a different person up in Connecticut. She mucked out the animal stalls dressed in blue jeans and a hunter's cap, even climbed up onto the roof with her father's old shotgun, and shot at some rabbits she said had eaten her lettuce that year. Here was the solution to the mystery of why this woman was not married. Christmas Day was a difficult one, with Pietrik and Halina half a world away. We wrote letters back and forth, of course, and Pietrik sent a package of my favorite sweets for Christmas and the pencil drawing of Papa and Marta that Halina had sketched. But I still couldn't shake the tears. It helped to keep Susanna close by. Susanna hadn't required a corrective surgery like mine, but suffered through a round of chemotherapy to fight her cancer. She was still weak, so Caroline arranged us side by side in their living room on Christmas Day, warm near the fireplace, me in a wheelchair, and Susanna in Caroline's father's wing chair. This was my favorite room in that house, for it looked out across the garden, its great hedges and manicured boxwood paths, beautiful even in winter. We sat near the fire facing the Christmas tree in the corner, the angel atop it grazing the ceiling. There was a surprise under the tree from Caroline for each of us, a bottle of perfume Susanna had admired at a store called Bergdorf Goodman, and a selection of books for me, including The Power of Positive Thinking by Norman Vincent Peale. I had not thought to find a gift for Caroline, but Susanna made a cut paper picture for Caroline and Mrs. Faraday, featuring the house and all their animals. The horses and pig, chickens and cats, even Lucky the dog and their African gray parrot. Susanna said it was from the both of us, but it was clear who'd created the work of art. Mrs. Faraday had Sergei make the traditional 12 Polish dishes for dinner, which we all ate, stopping only for exclamations of true joy. After dinner, Mrs. Faraday wheeled me into the big old kitchen at the back of the house. This was my second favorite room, with its black and white tile floor and white porcelain sink big enough to bathe a small adult in. I sat at the kitchen table with Caroline and Mrs. Faraday and watched Susanna and Sergei wash the dishes together. My sister was still frail, but insisted on washing up. Her hair was gone from the radiation, leaving her completely bald. just as so many of us at the camp once were. She tied one of Caroline's French scarves around her head like a milkwoman. Sergei stuck close to her all night, even after dinner. I knew they had become more than friends. I'd seen her sneak back to our bedroom just before dawn from the servants' wing. The thought of it sent tears to my eyes. How could my sister be so secretive? Caroline poured us all coffee. How Matka would have loved being there, the coffee alone. Mrs. Faraday opened a fresh package of my favorite cookies, Fig Newtons, and poured us each a thimble glass of orange liqueur. How was Susanna's blood work? She asked.
It's looking better, Caroline said. They're optimistic.
It is exciting, but you may still need more treatment, Susanna, Mrs. Faraday said. Susanna smiled. Maybe then I could stay indefinitely. Sergei smiled back at her. Only a simpleton could miss the fact that they were sweet for each other.
A Russian? He was good-looking enough in that simple Russian way, but what would Papa say?
Let's get to California first, I said. I can't wait to see the movie stars' homes. They say Rodeo Drive is packed with stars.
You must get out there and smile for all those Californians, Mrs. Faraday said. It is a lovely tooth, dear. I smiled and ran my tongue over my new canine, which had taken the place of my old decayed one. What would Pietrick think of my new smile?
I bit a Fig Newton in half and chased it down with a brandy in one shot, as we did back home with vodka. Caroline sniffed the cream and poured a bit in her coffee.
There are more interesting things to see in Los Angeles than celebrities. The La Brea tar pits, for one.
Dying beasts trapped in tar, Mrs. Faraday said. God, awful. Let these women have some fun, dear.
Too bad Mrs. Faraday wasn't coming to California with us. She took up the brandy and started to refill my thimble glass. Caroline took the bottle from her.
No more brandy for the girls, Mother.
Good gracious, Caroline, it's Christmas.
Kasia's already had too much. She is recovering, Mother.
A little brandy never hurt a patient. The Woolseys rubbed brandy on baby's gums.
Caroline stood, plucked the bottle from the table, and rested it on the counter. Mrs. Faraday smiled at me and rolled her eyes. How lucky Caroline was to have her mother. Susanna and Sergei hadn't noticed any of it, since you've never seen two people so happy to do dishes, laughing and poking each other with sudsy fingers. Caroline raised her cup of coffee to toast.
Merry Christmas, all.
Wesołe Świąt, Mrs. Faraday and I said, toasting with our empty glasses. Merry Christmas. Chapter 43, Kasia, 1959. The following spring, we all traveled from our respective cities and met up at San Francisco International Airport. We'd been away for several months at that point and all missed home. But San Francisco had never seen so many happy Polish women. Janina joined us all the way from France. She'd recovered there with Anissa's help and gone to hair school in Paris, which improved our hairstyles a lot.
How we all loved California. The air fresh and clean, the sun so welcome to those of us who'd spent winter in cold New England.
Nice as San Francisco was, Los Angeles was the highlight of the West Coast. You should have heard the chatter on that bus. Where to go first? Grauman's Chinese Theater? Rodeo Drive? Best of all, I could walk, like a normal person, with some of the old pain left, but without a noticeable limp. Plus, the plastic surgery had smoothed out my calf and made my leg look more normal. Dr. Rusk had prescribed some pain pills, but I could have walked Rodeo Drive all day. We went to Disneyland, a place we'd heard so much about. The 36 of us arrived by air-conditioned bus, Caroline filming it all with her 8mm camera like a Hollywood director. She brought her guitar along and played that at the noon meal, but we still had a good morning. Frontierland was especially fun. We took a ride on a log raft at Tom Sawyer Island. Susanna fell in love with the three little pigs. Somehow, these three poor souls, trapped in overstuffed human clothes, black eyebrows like parentheses painted on their papier-mâché heads in perpetual surprise, touched her heart. When Susanna simply mentioned this, it sent Caroline snapping a million pictures of my sister with these oversized bald pigs. Things got tense at the Casey Jr. circus ride. That was the child-sized train that circled the edges of the park. It was not a particularly scary-looking train, but the haunting call of its whistle had followed us around the park all day. When it came time to board, Janina just couldn't. It was hard to forget that other train we'd been on. After California, we toured our way back across America, stopping at the Grand Canyon and Las Vegas. Susanna thought she'd broken the slot machine when the light started flashing and money poured from it. By the time we made it to Washington, D.C., and were introduced at a special session of Congress, we felt like movie stars ourselves. Once we arrived back in New York, we all fanned out to stay with different families for our last week, and Susanna and I continued to be Caroline's guests, this time at her apartment in New York City. Caroline fussed over my sister like a mother hen, surprising her with a new nightdress and slippers. Once the doctors gave Susanna the good news that her cancer was officially in remission, Caroline celebrated and bought us both new dresses at Bergdorf Goodman. You've never seen a woman so happy. You'd have thought Caroline was Susanna's mother. If eating was any indication, my sister was recovering with record speed. It may have had something to do with being in Manhattan, the place of Susanna's dreams. Or maybe it was Caroline's Russian cook stuffing Susanna with Polish food. Or maybe it was the automat. When I die, I want to come here, Susanna said, holding her white china cup under the silver dolphin spigot. Coffee swirled into the cup, dark and fragrant. If New York City was our land of Oz, the automat was our Emerald City. As the free matchbook said, it was the Horn and Hardart automat at 57th and 6th. It was warm enough inside to take your coat off, and food appeared there as if by magic. Happy women dressed in black, called nickel throwers, sat in the glass booths and made change for paper bills with rubber tips on their fingers. Put a nickel in a slot next to a food you liked, and the little door would open. Just like that, you could choose cooked pullet, apple pie, brown sugary baked Boston beans. Over 400 different foods. We wanted to eat there every day. Susanna and I blended in well. In our new Bergdorf Goodman dresses, we lived up to our new name, the Ravensbrück Ladies. It was hard to believe our trip was nearly over, that we'd fly out soon and leave it all behind, but I couldn't wait to get home, to see Pietrik, Halina. Hard as it was to admit, I'd even miss Caroline, who'd done so much for us all. But it would be nice to finally have Susanna to myself the whole plane trip home to laugh and talk about everything. Susanna set her tray across from mine. I'm getting fat, Kasia. Don't you love mashed potatoes? On her plate, emerald peas rolled about a hill of mashed up potatoes, a puddle of brown sauce on top. A woman came to our table with a pot of fresh coffee and moved to pour some into my cup. No, I said, one hand over it, for I had not ordered extra coffee.
It's called the free refill, said Susanna.
New York was full of surprises like that.
Susanna dipped her fork in potatoes, trapped a few peas, and ate. She looked wonderful, like a fashion model.
What we wouldn't have given for peas back then, she said.
She couldn't bring herself to say Ravensbrück.
At least now Hertha Oberhäuser is in a cold cell eating beans from a can, I said.
You might think about letting it go, Kasia.
I'll never forgive them, if that's what you're saying.
It only hurts you to hold on to the hate. My sister seldom bothered me, but her positivity could be irritating. How could I forgive? Some days the hate was the only thing that got me through. I changed the subject.
I'm glad you're getting fat, I said. Papa won't know you. You're like a different person, although one who has not even packed yet.
Susanna kept her eyes on her potatoes. I have a favor to ask you, Kasia.
I smiled. What would I not do for my sister? I ran the tip of my tongue over my new tooth, afraid it might not still be there. It was my favorite souvenir, smooth and perfect, the exact color of my other teeth. I practiced my smile just for fun. A group of young men and women came into the automat and scrambled into a booth. A boy kissed a girl long and hard, right there in public. How free and happy they seemed. I could see it all with my smart new eyeglasses.
Anything, I said.
Susanna pulled a folder from her bag and slid it next to my tray.
I need your help. To choose.
I opened the folder and flipped through the photographs inside. There were 6, maybe 7 pictures in there taken from the shoulders up, black and white, like passport photos, all of children, some infants, some older. I closed the folder.
What is this?
Susanna pressed little garden gates into her potatoes with the tines of her fork.
Caroline gave it to me.
For? I took her free hand.
Susanna, what's happening?
She drew her hand away. I've been wanting to tell you. I was at the hospital last week, and they asked my opinion about the case.
That happens all the time. What does that have to do with anything?
Afterward, they asked me if I would teach a class.
Here?
I said.
Yes, here. Where else, Kasia?
I asked Caroline to extend my visa.
You're not coming home?
Why had I fought to bring her there only to lose her?
Well, of course I'm coming home. Don't be ridiculous. It's just that I was granted a special extension for doctors.
It's the cook, isn't it? Why had I let that go on for so long?
Susanna gave me her serious doctor look.
He has a name, Kasia.
Papa will have a stroke. I'm not telling him.
The photos of the children are from Caroline. They need homes. One named Julian just lost both parents to an automobile accident in Inganish, on the coast of Cape Breton Island in Canada.
That's what orphanages are for.
He's a toddler, Kasia. Caroline says that if Sergei and I make things, well, more permanent.
Marry him? I hope you're joking.
Then she could help us adopt, once I'm completely better.
We want to open a restaurant together, mostly crepes and quiche at first. So I am to go home alone while you stay here and marry a Russian cook and open a French restaurant and raise someone else's child?
I am 44 years old, with no prospects, Kasia. You already have your family. This is my only chance.
At home you can
do what?
Work myself to death at the hospital, delivering other people's babies? Do you know what that's like? I'm going to do what I can to make my life a good one in the time I have left. I suggest you do the same. Matka would want that.
What do you know about Matka?
You think she'd want you sleeping with a Russian cook, turning your back on Lublin?
Susanna snatched the folder and slid it back into her bag. I'm going to forget you said that, dear sister. She walked out the door without a look back, leaving me with her tray, the mashed potatoes hardly touched. Caroline brought us up to the hay for the final few days of the trip. My last morning in Connecticut, I woke with a start from a dream of flying over wheat fields, hand in hand with my mother. It was one of those happy, so real you'd swear it was true dreams. Until I realized it was not Matka's, but Herta Oberhäuser's cold hand I was holding. I sat up, heart hammering. Where was I? Safe in Caroline's guest bedroom. I felt the bed beside me. Cold. Susanna was up already? Visiting her Russian friend, no doubt. Maybe it was good she was staying. She'd be safe and well cared for. But how could I go back to Lublin without her? I padded down the hall in bare feet and through Caroline's high-ceiling bedroom, past her perfectly made canopy bed, through the tall windows overlooking the garden below. A winged stone cherub stood in the center of the clipped circles of boxwood hedges, guarding the tulips and bluebells. Caroline knelt at a rose bed, steam rising from the white mug next to her on the grass as a sea of lilac bushes swayed behind her in the breeze. I breathed in the safety of it all and exhaled, my breath on the glass turning the scene into a blur of electric green and lavender. I ached to see Pietrik and Halina again, but there in that old house, nothing could hurt me. A whole ocean between me and my troubles. I dressed and wandered downstairs in search of my sister and hot coffee. Finding neither in the kitchen, I hesitated at the kitchen window and watched Caroline in the garden. She wore canvas garden gloves, her hair cut back with a scarf as she tugged weeds from soil around the thorny stalks. Caroline's pig lay sleeping open-mouthed, a stone's throw away, under a lilac bush, pawing at the ground as if running in her sleep. Should I join them? I was in no mood for a lecture. Caroline spotted me at the window and waved to me with her trowel. I had no choice but to step out the kitchen door. "Have you seen Susanna?" I asked. "She and Sergei took mother to Woodbury. Come and weed, dear. It's good for the soul." So is coffee, I thought. I walked along the gravel path and knelt beside Caroline. The house rose above us like a great white ship from a sea of purple lilacs waving at its base. You've never seen lilacs in such colors, from deep aubergine, almost black, to the palest lavender. "Sorry I took the last of the coffee," she said. "The early risers got to it first." A dig at me? I ignored it. "I think you designed the perfect garden," I said. "Oh, it was Mother. We just moved in, and Father called the landscapers to come plant a garden, and they surprised Mother when they asked for a garden plan. She took her pencil and sketched the design of the Aubusson rug in the library and handed it to the men. Works perfectly well, I think." From where I knelt, the scent of rose and lilac was almost solid. Such a beautiful fragrance. Caroline pulled out the dandelion, hairy root and all, and tossed it in her bucket. "The scent is strongest in the morning. Once the sun is overhead, things dry out and flowers keep their fragrance to themselves." Why had I not spoken to Caroline about her garden before? We had the common love of flowers, after all. I slid the trowel from her bucket and pulled a green sapling from the earth with a satisfying pop. We worked without speaking, spearing the dark earth with our trowels. The only sounds, the birds chattering in nearby trees, and Caroline's pig's gentle snore. "I must say, you're the rock of your family, Kasia, dear." How nice it was to hear that praise. "I suppose. I knew the first time I saw you on stage in Warsaw that you have a special strength." Not really. Since my mother... Caroline rested one canvas-gloved hand on my arm.
Seems like your mother was a remarkable woman, very much like you. Strong, resilient. I'm sure you loved her very much.
I nodded.
I thought I might die when my father passed away. It was so long ago. But there isn't a day that goes by that I don't wish he were here.
Caroline waved toward the lilac bushes that swayed above us.
He loved these.
It's a lovely reminder of him, but terribly sad, too.
To see his favorite Abraham Lincoln lilacs blossom without him.
Caroline wiped her cheek with the back of her gardening glove, leaving a dark smudge below one eye, then pulled off her gloves. But it's fitting in a way. Father loved the fact that a lilac only blossoms after a harsh winter. Caroline reached over and smoothed the hair back from my brow with a light touch. How many times had my mother done that?
It's a miracle all this beauty emerges after such hardship, don't you think?
Suddenly, water came to my eyes, and the grass swam in front of me. I could only nod. Caroline smiled.
I'll have Mr. Gardner pack you up some lilac saplings to plant back in Lublin.
No need to pack any for Susanna, I said.
Caroline sat back on her heels. I wanted to tell you sooner.
It's fine. It's good, really. At first I was sad, but you've helped her in ways I never could, to get well, to raise a child of her own someday. My mother would have liked that. I don't know how to thank you.
Caroline pressed her hand over mine. That's not necessary, Kasia, dear.
Susanna and I have taken so much from you. I wish I had something to give.
You've been good for all of us, especially Mother.
We continued weeding in silence. I would miss Bethlehem.
Caroline turned to me. Well, there is one thing, Kasia.
What is it?
Something I've been meaning to discuss with you.
Of course.
It concerns, well, someone. Someone you used to know.
Anything.
Well, Hertha Oberhäuser, actually.
Just the name made me feel sick to my stomach. I steadied myself, one hand to the grass.
What about her? I am terribly sorry to even bring it up, but my sources tell me she may have been released early.
I stood, dizzy, trowel in hand.
Impossible. The Germans can't let her out.
Why could I not breathe?
As far as we know, Americans did this, back in 1952, quietly.
I paced toward the house and then back.
She's been out all this time? Why would they do that? There was a trial. I don't know, Kasia. With Russia trying to woo German doctors away from the U.S., we may have been trying to curry favor. Somehow the Germans lose every war, but win every peace.
Your sources are wrong.
Caroline stood and touched my sleeve. They think the West German government has helped Hertha settle up in Stocksee, northern Germany. She may be practicing as a doctor again, a family doctor.
I brushed off her touch. I don't believe it. She killed people, did this to me.
I pulled back my skirt.
Caroline stepped closer.
I know, Kasia. We can fight it.
I laughed.
Fight them? How exactly would this happen? First, we need someone to make a positive ID.
And that someone would be...
Only if you're comfortable.
The sun came up over the trees, warm on my shoulders.
Comfortable? No, I am not comfortable with that. I threw the trowel in the bucket where it landed with a clatter. How can you even suggest I visit Hertha Oberhäuser? All at once,
The sun seemed too hot.
We need a photograph or an official receipt from her office. Otherwise, it's simply hearsay.